Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studio for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Thanks for joining us this week and for hanging out with us on the phone lines, listening, going back to the podcast. We appreciate you and listening. Appreciate all of our guests as well. And looking forward to closing out the week here on Friday with George Hammond, University of Arizona economist, about the latest employment situation, latest weekly indicators about the economy, and remote work. We've been hearing about remote work a lot here in the region. What are the numbers behind it, and what are the possibilities? We'll talk about all that and more with George Hammond in a second. We'll probably wrap up a little bit of conversation we started yesterday about Prop 208. My two questions for both the yes and the no campaign. We'll recap that. And then Financial Friday will close us out as they always do. Experience investment advice for the seasoned investor and the young professional alike. That's our show today. Let's welcome on in now George Hammond, again, economist from the U of A. George, happy Friday. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to be here with you, Zach.
Yeah, looking forward to, as we always do, talking about the economy. So here's the question, George, to kick us off. What letter of the alphabet are we looking at here? Is it a U? Is it a W? Is it a Y? Is it a K? Is it a V? we've heard just about every alphabet letter in the soup on how this economy is looking. What's the shape as you're seeing it right now for the recovery?
Yeah, there's still a lot of uncertainty about how this is going to play out, and that uncertainty is driven by the future course of the outbreak. But the way it's panning out so far is none of the above. It looks some people are calling this a reverse square root economy, and that's it has a bit of a V shape as we bounced up from the bottom in April. Saw some really strong gains in May and June, and the July, August, September data has been modestly up, but we're in the middle of a kind of a slow build back to the pre-pandemic levels. And I think if we can avoid a major outbreak in the fall and winter months, a major acceleration in the outbreak that necessitates major shutdowns again. If we can avoid that, I think we'll get back to the pre-pandemic levels towards the end of next year.
Give us what you're seeing by the numbers about Arizona's jobs report since the last month we talked last month, and also the unemployment rate. How are those two numbers looking?
Yeah, the latest data for September was released yesterday by the BLS and the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity. And, what it suggests was modest job growth, non-seasonally adjusted. We added about 30,000 jobs over the month. A big chunk of that was driven by seasonal hiring in education. On a seasonally adjusted basis, our non-farm payroll jobs are about 4.2% below where we were in February. And that's a modest improvement over August. The August data suggests that we were 4.2% below. So, we're continuing to build back, but it's progress has really slowed from the really strong bounce that we got in May and June. For the unemployment rate, that's a really tricky number these days. It's been very volatile. And the unemployment rate data is always more volatile during the current year. It's more volatile this year than it has been in past years, probably driven by some survey issues, again, caused by the pandemic. But, Arizona's unemployment rate went from over 10% in July down to 5.9% in August, and then in September the estimate bounces back up to 6.7%, all on a seasonally adjusted basis. So this number has been zigging and zagging a lot. But I think the, what I take away from what I see in the trends over the past couple of months is that the, the unemployment rate is probably down significantly from where it was, at over 13% in April. I think we're somewhere in the neighborhood or a bit below the national rate, which was 7.9% in September. So we are seeing improvement in the labor market and in the overall economy, but it's been slower going the last couple of months.
And again, is this still due to, a level of underemployment or some jobs that went away that have not been replaced at all? And there's some skill shift there? Or how do you square adding jobs back but seeing a spike in unemployment? What does that mean?
Yeah, with the unemployment rate rising, what this preliminary data for September suggests is that we did see some unemployed individuals restarting their job search, most likely, and that gets them back being counted as part of the number of unemployed and as part of the overall labor force. So, and that's a bit of a reversal from what we saw in August, where it looked like a large number of people had dropped out of the labor force. So this is, this data is volatile on a month-to-month basis. So it wouldn't make too much out of the monthly zigs and zags, but it does suggest that we are seeing, modest improvement in employment, and we've probably seen some people dropping out of the labor force as well.
We're with George Hammond this morning, economist from the University of Arizona. George, this is anecdotal. I don't have the data like you do to back any of this up, but I have heard from so many people, George, say, I now have the time to start the business I always wanted to start, or this is a time where maybe my job situation changed. I'm gonna go start that business I wanted to start. I hear that quite a bit. How does entrepreneurship or starting a business fit into these numbers? Is there anything there that maybe moves the needle? Where we're seeing maybe more entrepreneurship or more business starts? Is there anything there that you're seeing?
Yeah, we actually track Arizona new business applications on our Arizona's Economy Online magazine, and that's at azeconomy.org. And we track this data weekly. And what we have seen is that, over the past couple of months, we've seen a major surge in these new business applications. They're up just in the last week, which ended the data that we have ends in October 10th, those new business applications were up almost 30% over the year. And the 52-week average is up 8.5% over the year. So we are absolutely seeing a surge in new business applications. This is likely people who are being dislocated from their jobs, looking to start something new and looking to start up a new business. So this is something that we do sometimes see as the economy slows and people lose their jobs. They will look to start a new business in this way.
That's kind of exciting, though, isn't it? I mean, is that a reason for optimism?
It can be a reason for optimism, but it also, it is connected to these dislocations from formal employment. Mm. So we see the job loss, people will turn to self-employment, and they'll file these new business applications. So it's an indicator of the resilience of people as they respond to mm-hmm. tough times.
We're going to continue this conversation with George Hammond, economist from the University of Arizona. When we come back from our first break here, we'll talk about some other data points, some weekly indicators. We'll talk about maybe some policy questions. And then we're also going to talk about a topic I'm excited to dig into is remote work. Are we seeing people who live in Arizona, who live in Tucson, but have a job in another state? Is that number going to grow throughout this recovery process? That and more when we come back from our break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, Tucson. We'll continue in a minute.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030, The Voice.
Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
I'm Steve, and I'm the manager at Jones Photo. The company's been around since 1947, so we've been in Tucson a long time. The services we offer for our customers are film developing, prints of any size. We work with film, we work with transparencies, we work with digital files, just about anything that you can make a print from. Our goal in servicing our clients is always to produce the best work possible.
Jones Photo, 520-327-9521.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson and Southern Arizona, welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios. About once a month, we ask George Hammond, economist from the University of Arizona, to give us a glimpse into our COVID-19 recovery, into our economy as it is moving along. And we look at some indicators like jobs and unemployment numbers that come out on a monthly and quarterly basis. Now we want to switch over to some weekly indicators. George Hammond, you look at a few numbers that you get to see weekly. What are those, and what does it tell you about our economy right now?
Yeah, we track a large number of weekly indicators on the MAP dashboard and on azeconomy.org. And a lot of these weekly indicators are geared towards tracking the travel and tourism industry, since it was hit most hard by the pandemic. And what we're seeing is that TSA traveler throughput, so these are passengers passing through TSA checkpoints nationally, that's been stuck around 5 million passengers per week for about 3 months now. And just to give you a sense of what that means, that's about one-third of the weekly passenger traffic that we should be seeing at this time of year. So, you know, air travel is still down significantly. Hotel occupancy rates are running at about 50% nationally and likely here in Arizona as well. So, you know, the hotel sector, particularly that conference type sector that depends on people flying into the state, is still likely really suffering. Seated diners at restaurants, so think of a restaurant where you would tend to make a reservation or you know, sit down and stay for a while, the activity at those restaurants is still down significantly, you know, 30 to 40% below where it was a year ago. So, you know, the travel and tourism industry is still really feeling the effects of the pandemic, and we've got a ways to go before that really starts to improve significantly.
George, what is the tipping point for Tucson specifically as a region that is really dependent on bed tax, hotel occupancy, seated diners, food, air travel? Is there a point in time in the next 5, 6, 7 months where if we don't see solid improvement in those numbers, we're in for more and more hurt? Like, what is that point where it switches over from we think we can get through this and it's inconvenient to, okay, this is a problem? Do you have any forecasts and projections on that?
Well, I think we're heading into that period now, and we know that the CARES Act had a significant positive impact on Arizona and Tucson. It funneled billions of dollars, roughly $30 billion, into the state just in the second quarter. That was through increased unemployment insurance benefits, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the recovery rebates that were sent out in April. That had a significant impact on our overall retail sales, spending at the restaurants that were open, and other sorts of activities. But the CARES Act, particularly those generous benefits for unemployment insurance, those are over, and I think that's contributing to some of the slower growth that we're seeing as we get into the later months of the summer. So I think we're going to need additional federal fiscal support for the economy. Otherwise, this is going to drag on in a more severe way than it would otherwise if we had that federal fiscal support.
George Hammond, we've got about 6 minutes left, so I want to make this last follow-up question more quicker than longer, but that is one option. Another option is local policy on the coronavirus changes with regard to the economy. Are there any policy decisions that local policymakers need to be making with regard to closures and use of flights and hotels and restaurants, anything that at a local level we should be doing maybe?
Well, I think doing what we can to support local activity, and I do see that going on at the state and local levels. The issue going forward is going to be what people are actually deciding to do with their day-to-day decisions. I think the more that we, respect the virus and the pandemic, and as individuals take care of our maintaining social distancing, being sure to wear a mask, that will help keep the outbreak as under control as we can, and that will allow businesses to stay open and do more business in the long run.
George Hammond, economist from the University of Arizona. About 5 minutes left. Really excited to talk about this topic. When I asked, hey, what's on your radar? I'm glad to see that this one is. It seems to be a conversation that's picking up a lot of steam locally here, and that is remote work. According to the Census Bureau, about 61,000 Arizona residents, George, work in other states, primarily California. But there are those who live in Arizona, but they have a job in another state. It does work both ways. Give us a picture of that. Are we seeing an increase in remote workers who are living in Tucson, even though they're employed by someone who is headquartered somewhere else?
Yeah, this is something that that we're all talking a lot about these days. And, the hard numbers that we have are available only with a bit of a lag. Now, the latest data that we're talking about was for 2017. And that gives us a sense of where, the connections are. And, Arizona has close connections with California and several states in the West. That's where California is where we draw the majority of our migrants. It's for Arizona residents that have jobs in other states. The majority of those are in California, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, Texas. But it's likely that the pandemic, particularly in the short run, will generate more remote workers seeking to live in lower cost of living states, particularly those with a lower cost of housing. And that's certainly true as we compare Arizona to, you know, the major metros in the West, like Los Angeles, San Francisco, even Seattle. So that'll be something for us to watch. I think we will see some of that, particularly in the short run. I'm less sure of whether or not that'll be an enduring change. But this will be something that we'll want to keep an eye on going forward, absolutely.
Yeah, I just met someone yesterday and some of my networks who followed his partner here, but has a job that he's working remotely from, that is headquartered somewhere else, but now living in Tucson. When you look around the country, George, there's a lot of cities and communities doing this where they're offering incentives and some stipends and things like that to bring in remote workers. Have you seen that be sustainable around the country? Is that a viable way to grow a workforce and to invite some people into our community? And what have you seen work?
Well, I think, we, in terms of attracting people like that, I think we, I'm not sure that incentives and stipends are the way to go. I think pursuing, you know, sustainable long-run policies, making sure that we're investing in education, making sure that we're keeping our tax and regulatory policies competitive with other states is key. You know, Arizona, for decades, we have net migration attracting more people from other states than we lose to other states. It's been a major source of our population growth. There's a lot of great reasons to move to Arizona. The climate, the dynamic economy. So I'm not sure that we need a lot of incentives. We just need to do those long-term things right and make sure that we pay attention to evolving changes. We are seeing housing affordability gradually deteriorate. You know, house prices and rents in many cases are rising faster than individuals' incomes, and that's what will erode, at least to some extent, our attractiveness to people looking to locate here.
George Hammond, I will post the article you wrote, nazeconomy.org, who lives in Arizona but has a job in another state, Arizona's economy. I'll post that for our listeners on my public page. We have 1 minute and ticking, George. Where can people go to find more information about the research you're doing and the MAP dashboard and all that good stuff?
Yeah, the MAP dashboard is a key resource for the community. That's available at MAP. az-dashboard.arizona.edu, and we do really a series of really cool things there. There's articles on how the local economy is dealing with the pandemic. We do regular MAP talks, so webinars. You can check in and see what I, other researchers in the center, and other researchers around the University of Arizona are thinking about what matters. We just had a cool one on the impact of trade wars on manufacturing in Southern Arizona.
George Hammond, economist from the University of Arizona. Thank you so much, as always, for these monthly updates, and we'll see you next time. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Thanks, Zach. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, George, as always. We'll be back, Tucson, after bottom of the hour news break. We'll wrap up a little bit of 208 conversation on our way to Financial Friday. We'll be back.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, welcome on back into the 1030 The Voice studio. Want to wrap up the week with a part B of our conversation. We started a little bit yesterday together on Proposition 208. And I had two questions that I posed around this idea that some estimates are that that Arizona will need to spend $4 billion on education a year going forward to both catch up and maintain current needs. Some estimates say that we've had $4 billion less dollars in funding since 2008-2009 than we need. And so as I look at Proposition 208, my question for the Yes on 208 campaign has been, we can funnel $1 billion to teachers through this, but that's not the only need we have. It's a drop in the bucket. It's a little bit more than that, but it's a drop in the bucket. There are other needs. If we've just assessed an income tax on higher wage earners, what are the other methods to make up the costs? For the No on Prop 208 campaign, I said, I haven't heard a lot of other options. We know that the resounding majority, and it is resounding, it's not hyperbolic, of Arizonans across the political spectrum want more funding for education. So if we don't do Proposition 208, the ask is not going to go away. I haven't heard of what the solution is. And so I'm asking of both sides, basically, where do we go from here? Because there is a next after this. Where do we go from here? This is only the beginning. And I think the conversation, quite frankly, has been extremely short-sighted from both the Yes and the No campaign. And so I asked that question. We've got about 9-10 minutes before our final break of the hour. Barney called in yesterday. We couldn't continue the conversation. I asked Barney to call back. One of our callers, Barney, did call back. Barney, welcome back, and thanks for putting this conversation off a day. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, Zach, and thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, so you had some thoughts, particularly on the question that I asked the No on 208 supporters out there listening, is if we don't vote this through, what next? What are the options that I haven't heard much about?
All right. Well, there are actually numerous elephants in the room, and what's not mentioned much is actually the percentage of the state budget, the entire state budget, that actually goes to education. And people bandy about the numbers. The actual numbers are in the 60% range, including the three universities and all public schools in the state. And I want to frame the issue a little bit better by saying, when we say public schools, we're really talking about government schools. And once you frame it in that perspective, you get the impression that, well, heck, there's not a heck of a lot of stuff that the government does really well. And the fact is that education, and more particularly education spending, they do a poor job on. And the authority for that spending devolves to various school districts. And rare is the district in the state of Arizona that spends its money efficiently. And there is the key, because we have, for instance, the largest school district in the city of Tucson, TUSD, and the percentage of money that actually goes into the classroom is absolutely horrendous. It's well under 50%, And when you have those kind of numbers and incredible amounts of money wasted on education, you can credibly make the case that these institutions don't deserve a single extra cent until they get their spending in order. I'm sorry for going on a bit, but that has to be said. And anything you want to ask me on this issue, I'm a resounding no on 208, no matter what you provide. And about every 2 years, there's a hue and cry, we need more money. And it's been nonsense for decades because they squander the money we give them. And no matter what you do give them, like we gave quite a bit of money additional to teachers just a couple of years ago, it simply becomes the new baseline or the new launching point to say, give us more.
Yeah, Barney, and the only thing that I was going to jump in with is I know that the state's formula does account for charter schools as well, not necessarily private charters, but charters as an arm of public education, which they are. It is both public education and charter education. And I'm glad you brought that up because in 2018. The state of Arizona spent $5.3 billion on education. In 2020, it was over $1 billion more, $6.5 billion. Still, the what we pay teachers is still at the bottom of the barrel compared to the rest of the country. I think we're between 45th and 50th in what we pay teachers.
Okay, let's address that. And
that was my question, Barney, is when you look at what is required to fill that gap, do we have enough in your mind in the current system to...
Do we actually have a gap? It is astonishing the number of states in various categories, including education, where proponents of the give us more money school say, oh, we're 49th or 50th. And if you look at all the claims, there are multiple states that are all vying for that dubious distinction simply so they can ask for more money. And I'll give you one of the ploys they use. And they throw out a number of costs for teachers and classroom costs and administration, which is the administration money is terribly wasted. And they say that's all they give us. And so the number, the amount we're spending per student is X. I've heard it as low as 5,000 in this state. The actual number is somewhere upwards of 9,000 because they leave out the physical plant costs, and they do this deliberately and deceitfully because, again, it's real easy to stick your hand out and say, it's like we're the parents and we have this profligate child that wastes the money, their allowance we give them on candy, and comes back and asks for more. Not a perfect analogy, but that is what's going on. And until we have accountability on those not only dollars spent, but beyond that, we need to have standards in the classroom so even the money spent within the classroom is used to give these kids a high-quality education, teach them basics, which TUSD does a horrible job of, and they don't have these kids leaving school even with the ability to read at an on-grade level. It's abysmal. Again, I'll reiterate, they do not deserve any more money, and I hope... And it's just so easy to say, oh, our poor kids, we're shortchanging them. And I'm sorry, I meant to mention, because you brought up teacher pay. One thing the unions, and they are significant culprits in this whole discussion, is that they steadfastly refuse to allow for merit pay. I wouldn't mind seeing the stellar teachers get close to six figures, and they also steadfastly prevent not substandard, but horrid teachers that shouldn't be in the classroom and have committed major infractions, the union fights tooth and nail to keep those in at a great disservice to our kids.
I've got literally 2 minutes, Barney. And so for the last question, you know, we talked a lot about teacher pay, administrative pay. The legislature, at least through the middle of the 2010s, funded only about 20% of what the law requires for the building of new schools and major school repairs. This is one of my concerns that I've asked those who are in support of 208 is, yes, teachers are a huge component of this, but we've underfunded new charter schools. We've underfunded capital costs. We've underfunded, some would argue, teachers and administrative pay. There's so many buckets to catch up on that once 208, this conversation is done, this problem won't go away. In 1 or 2 minutes, Barney, your proposed solution to these challenges that people are calling out.
Certainly. First, let me start, Zach, by saying how much I appreciate you inviting me on the show. I'd love to come on various other topics. Politically, I'm extremely involved in at multiple levels, so I may be able to be an asset to you there. Now, with regard to your 20% that you're mentioning, I have to say I am completely unfamiliar with that number, so I just can't address it. But to say that the legislature has only funded 20% of what's needed, it strikes me as highly suspect. You mentioned that people are saying we don't get enough administrative pay. I started to chuckle at that. If I was an education czar, administrative pay would be cut in half to start. At university levels, we have hundreds, perhaps thousands of positions that have been introduced in the last decade or more that never existed, were never needed to educate our kids, and are sucking up untold millions of dollars. I know we're getting out of time, so I've made a bunch of decent points, and I'll just close with, until you say the problem won't go away unless we address 208, I would counter by saying the problem will not go away until we have accountable school boards that make sure three-quarters of the spending on their schools go not only into the classroom, but into a classroom that has scholastic standards, behavioral standards, and I'll close hearing the music, and that administrative can include transportation as well. So thank you for the time, and thanks for getting this information out to your listening audience.
Barney, thank you for calling back in. We'll continue this conversation through the month. Two of my genuine questions to continue to learn and assess, where are we at? Where do we go from here? Barney, thank you again. Let's go to our last break. The guys from MassMutual are on the other side. Don't go away.
Your source for trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Hi, my name is Shanae with HR Resolve. Whether you are a self-employed individual or hire up to 35 employees, HR Resolve is your small business corporate office. We are locally owned, providing everything from general administrative and accounting services to payroll services and hiring. I started out just me, grew my company right here in Tucson, and want to help you succeed too. Call me and the HR Resolve team at 520-867-8384 to get started.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, It's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
I'm Steve, and I'm the manager at Jones Photo. The company's been around since 1947, so we've been in Tucson a long time. The services we offer for our customers are film developing, prints of any size. We work with film, we work with transparencies, we work with digital files, just about anything that you can make a print from. Our goal in servicing our clients is always to produce the best work possible.
Jones Photo, 520-327-9521.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live? Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Welcome back to our last segment of the show here, Tipping Point on 1030 The Voice. We always love ending our week with the guys from MassMutual for Financial Friday. Jason, Brian, good to see you as always. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Zach? Happy Financial Friday. So this week we have a guest back in the hot seat with us. This week we're inviting an attorney who works with planning for wills, trusts, power of attorneys, Jim Whitehill. Welcome to Financial Friday.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be with you today.
So, Jim, I do want to, I'd like to discuss a couple of topics here. One being, why it's so important for us professionals to work together with clients. And then the other one is why, you know, powers of attorneys, trusts, estate planning, why is it so important? So, you know, which one do you want to hit first?
Well, let's talk about why it's so important to put together a team.
Sure.
To help clients.
Let's do it.
And the reason I think it's important is because lawyers bring one element to the table. We bring the ability to understand the law and how it applies to particular clients' financial situation. When it comes to professional advice about investments, risk tolerance, those kinds of issues, people need the advice of a financial advisor who's a professional, who's been trained in that area, who works in that area on a daily basis. And that's the kind of thing that luckily you bring to the table for many of my clients. And my clients have been very pleased to be able to receive that professional kind of advice and assistance, that they don't have to go out and do the research on their own. They know somebody who's been there before, somebody who understands the way of the world when it comes to professional advice, and they very much appreciate the fact that you and accountants come to the table and can assist in looking at the tax consequences of certain decisions and one's overall financial picture in terms of planning and forecasting and those kinds of things. And that's really important. What I can do is bring the legal element to that equation, and that's all I like to bring to that equation.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before too, and it's just being our expert in our own field, and we may know some of the other areas, but we say let's leave it to those professionals in that specified area. It reminds me of a story because you and I are working with an individual currently right now, and it was someone that I had done some risk management planning with, doing some investments for the firm, and she has gotten sick. And so I know that I was able to introduce you to do some of the estate planning as well. And it's that kind of situation. I can't imagine what her life would be like thinking about all this stuff while she's just working on getting healthy.
Well, the other important thing about thinking about that team approach with potential clients is that it's important to do things in the financial world now. We know that people's circumstances will change over the course of their lifetime. For example, the person that somebody might select to be the guardian of his or her children, if something happens when they're 3 years old, might be very different when they're 13
sure.
years old.
Yeah.
But what we know is that planning at the early stages of one's life makes a big difference. Now, it's never too late to plan, but I would always say it's something that evolves over time, and that's the kind of skill that you are able to bring to the table and work with your clients and understand that it's a different situation when you're dealing with a 3-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 13-year-old, and then for the sake of argument, a 16 or 17-year-old.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I think that kind of moves us on as we're kind of getting another minute left here, is just kind of why it's so important. And you always told me, too, it's always more expensive as well to kind of deal with all this stuff afterwards as opposed to doing it now.
What I like to tell people is that if you don't plan in advance, there is, in fact, a plan. It's written into the Arizona Revised Statutes.
Yeah.
And what that means is that if people don't want the default plan that's written into law, then they need to take affirmative steps to put their own plan into place. That can be as simple as wills, healthcare power of attorney, financial power of attorney. It can also include trusts. It can also include other kinds of vehicles, beneficiary deeds, things that will help people get where they want to go. But if they don't plan in advance, a plan will be made for them by state law.
I don't think that's the most efficient plan.
Most people agree with you.
Yeah.
So that's why I encourage people to sit down and put that team together and begin to work on it.
Nice. Well, hey, Zach, I mean, that wraps it up for this week. Listeners can talk to anyone on our team, but if they've got anything specific, they can call us here at the office, 274-3749. Jim, thank you for joining us. It was great having you.
Thank you, Jason.
Yep, sounds good, Zach. Talk to you later.
Jason, as always, thanks for coming on every week to share great financial advice and tips and insights for young professionals and experienced investors alike. We appreciate you so much. Now is always the time to make sure you get your finances right. And the guys from Mass Mutual are here to help. That does it for our show today. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that. On Monday, we kick off our week right at 9:05 with Chief Chris Magnus, Tucson Police Department Chief Magnus. We'll talk about a lot of the items that have been in the news the last few months, and that will be a great way to start the week. And then we'll talk to our current Pima County Recorder to close things out on Monday. That and much more coming up next week here on Tipping Point. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Hey, Cafe Poca Cosa closing in Tucson yesterday hit me hard, and they will not be the first local restaurant that we love to do that if we don't support them. So consider making a visit to a local restaurant part of your weekend. There's a closing PSA, a call to action, Tucson. Let's come together on this. We'll be right back on Monday. Take care. Stay safe.